Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
My name is Frank Silvestri. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, not a Canadian. And Philly's really close to New Jersey, by the way. And I'm here to talk to you about why I am a Patreon supporter of Vish Khanna's Creative Control podcast, the unique long-form exploration of music, comedy, art, geography, and so much more. Vish is an incredible interviewer who has a charming, disarming, funny, reverently irreverent style, which feels a lot more like a conversation with friends than a podcast interview. These conversations have included talking to people like Jeff Tweedy, Nels Klein, Ira Kaplan, Dan Romano, Carson McCone, the white hot lung Juliana Riolino, and one of my all-time favorites, the Sadies. So if you're like me and you find these kind of conversations vital, essential, and important, I hope you'll join me in supporting Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
I just really love You've Changed. I love every part of it. I love being a part of it, and I love being friends with Steve and Daniel, and I really love their guidance, and I respect and I'm honored to be a part of it. So I really respect everything they do, and I have faith and confidence in what they do and who they are. And so, yeah, I love You've Changed. You've Changed forever. Woo!
1, 2, 3, 4.
You've Changed Records is one of the most thoughtful and prolific record labels in the world. And though its working artists hail from all across Canada, it's currently based in Sackville, New Brunswick. Established in March of 2009, You've Changed Records is celebrating its 15th anniversary in 2024. And so, as a longtime fan and follower of its artists and catalog, I decided to pay tribute to the label by exploring its origin story, primarily through an oral history as told by almost all of the key participants involved in its trajectory. A note that I myself am barely present here. I wanted to let the founders and artists speak for themselves. And due to scheduling issues, Leanne Simpson and I didn't connect for a fresh talk, but you will hear her voice here. You will also sporadically hear folks try and answer the question, where do you think the name You've Changed Records comes from? Their answers might surprise you. A part of the Entertainment One Network, with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this listener-supported and donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary and most reliable way for a podcaster just like me to make a living. And as I'm speaking to you, it is my primary source of income. So if you have the means, please support my work and this show at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you so much. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a wonderful record store with bricks and mortar locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and a great website, blackbird.ca. Say you want to order every single available record in the You've Changed Records catalog. You don't even know where to begin. You're just going to order them all en masse. Well, an independent record store like Blackbird, can't go wrong with Blackbird Music and other independent record stores. Again, learn more about this one at blackbird.ca and order those You've Changed Records releases. Plus, in-kind support from independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 850 of Creative Control, featuring appearances and insights by Stephen Lamke, Daniel Romano's Outfit, Attack in Black, Shotgun Jimmy, Julie Doron, Marine Dreams, Apollo Ghosts, The Burning Hell, Nap Eyes, Partner, John McKeel, Status Non-Status, Leanne Simpson, Fiverr, Colin Medley, and Juliana Riolino, among others. This is You've Changed Records is 15, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Crown of rosemary and a rosemary gown, I set myself in the mirror. Raspberry lipstick, blackberry shade, I've seen everything in the mirror.
My name's Stephen Lamke. I'm a musician and artist, and I run You've Changed Records.
Yes, my name is Daniel Romano, and I think technically, as far as the bank is concerned, I'm the president of You've Changed Records.
Hello, my name is Ian Kehoe, and I was involved with You've Changed Records with bands such as Baby Eagle and Shotgun Jimmy, Attack in Black, my own music under my own name, as well as the band name Marine Dreams, and I was also part of the original conception of and birth of the label. I'm almost 100% certain that the first time I and my friends, such as Dan and Spencer and Ian, my old band, met Steve, was because our old band, Attack in Black, played with Steve's, I guess, former band, the Constantines. And I think it was just maybe a short tour.
So that was probably like 2007, maybe. Six, somewhere in there.
The first time I met Steve was in Waterloo, and we were fans of his band, absolutely, and I particularly a fan of his lyricism and songwriting, and I just remember, I guess, kind of luckily getting along with the entire band, but in particular Steve on a creative level, I suppose, and yeah, just his, he was very jovial and like kind to us, and we were a little younger than Steve and the rest of the band is, so a little, like, we were just shy and very admiring and, I suppose, idolizing them in their artistry and lyricism and, yeah, greatness of being a band.
But the first show was in Waterloo at the Starlight, which is part of the Jane Bond kind of complex at the time, and I remember sort of we loaded in and then coming down to the sort of backstage room, which was at the bottom of the stairs. And I think it was Spencer was talking to Dan about how he had an icky tum-tum. And I just remember sort of setting my backpack down and thinking to myself, like, these guys are going to be all right. You know, we're gonna get on with these guys, all right. They have icky tum-tums. And then they were great.
Things kind of like spawn from that initial impulse. And I think that that would also speak to why myself and mainly Dan, but Ian and Spencer as well, gravitated towards Steve, and maybe why Steve gravitated towards us too. Yeah, something in common regarding our creative impulses that seemed to feel right, to put energy into making a situation where they had a place to go, I guess. Those are pretty fundamental reasons why, when I think of like why I feel so close with Dan and Steve, there's a similar impulse in a, yeah, unspoken kind of like understanding that we feel the same way about something very important to us.
We started Youth Change Records in... The idea kind of came up at summer of 2008. I was driving back from Sappy Fest in Sackville, New Brunswick, back towards Montreal with Attack and Black. Dan and Ian lived in Montreal at the time, too. I had caught a ride out to New Brunswick with them, and we were driving back home. And we're just sort of talking through the long drive about putting out records and sort of their maybe frustration or their desire to put out more records than they were being allowed to put out by their record label that they were working with at the time. And I just said, why don't you guys do your own thing? And I could help you with that.
We did that because we became quite jaded with the indie major setup that we were dealing with in our previous acts. And well, I can't speak to Steve about that, but I'm sure he would agree on some level about that. But we didn't see eye to eye with the business boys.
No, it was less reactionary. It was more, I think Starting You've Changed was definitely like based in my experiences of having worked like through the Constantines, worked with Three Gut Records, and just seeing what was possible from a very, very grassroots, very unaffiliated kind of standpoint. And Three Gut had sort of run its course by 2005 or six, I think, maybe. But it really, like, just being pretty close to that, it was a real lesson of what was possible. Like, I didn't feel like we were compromised by our continuing association with what was admittedly a pretty small label. Lisa Moran and Tyler Clark Burke at the beginning, and Lisa alone sort of at the end, like, just worked incredibly hard and achieved a whole lot. So for me personally, it was a very positive sort of lesson about what's possible rather than like a reaction against obstacles.
I don't remember it being a conscious sort of wish to be like another label or in contrast or in spite of another label, but it's conceivable that having a label that we were a part of and could do together would have been attractive, for sure.
It seemed like something that would be interesting to pursue. And I remember it was on a drive home from the East Coast. We sort of fabricated the whole idea for that. And at that point, we were talking about doing things with Shotgun Jimmy because we loved his first record. And I think we then played a couple shows with him, got friendly, and then recorded his record. And that's when we decided to like see what it's like to manufacture an album. And so then we did that. I was living in Montreal at the time and working at a record store, Phenopolis, and did a big window display for Jimmy and everything. It was quite fun.
The original idea, I think, was to have the Attack and Black Baby Eagle split be the first release. And it and Still Jimmy were both recorded at the Romano household, their folks' house, Ian and Daniel's parents' house, and they had a small studio in the basement there. And they were, both those records were recorded kind of at the same time, like in the same sort of window of time, and I don't really remember like the exact timing of that stuff, but the Jimmy record was done, came out first, so it was probably done first.
I know that we put out Jimmy's record first, so whether or not that had happened, the timeline's kind of iffy for me, Vish, so I don't remember if we'd made the record and decided to put out Jimmy first, or we decided to make the label, because I know right around then we did a split. We recorded some of Steve's songs, some Baby Eagle songs, and Steve recorded some of our songs, Attack and Black songs, which I think we may have also played on. So I feel like it was initially conceived when we were out east, either for Sappy Fest or on a tour with Baby Eagle, because Steve was definitely in the van with us.
And that was, it came out in March, and then the split came out in May, I think, so just a couple months later, which is actually pretty fast for like a new label to do a couple releases kind of quick like that. And kind of up to this day, even, like, we just sort of pursue the ideas and they happen the way they're happening. So like, it was not a big deal that the plan was for a split record to come out first, but then a Jimmy record came out first. Like, that's fine. Like, the plan kind of doesn't matter. Like, what matters is just pursuing the art and pursuing your curiosity as kind of quickly and as thoroughly and as passionately as you can.
I mean, in a sense, where we were more the three original owners. Although I would argue that I think Jesse Stein was actually part of it out the hop.
Jesse Stein, who was in a band called The Luyas, and Dan's former partner. I don't remember if she was present on tour with us, but soon after, yeah, was part of the conversation for sure, and helping and thinking with us for sure.
By my recollection, Jesse was not in the van at that point, but when we decided in that van to start a label, Jesse kind of was a part of it when we kind of pursued this idea. And she was around for maybe like a year or so, kind of. And it is actually hard for me to remember like who was kind of doing what. Like, I'm pretty sure like I didn't order like the Still Jimmy records. I think Dan, or maybe Dan and Jesse, like ordered the records to be made or whatever, like from the manufacturer, I mean. So I don't really remember, but Jesse had been running a label called Poem Records. And if I could use my own experience now to like think back to how Jesse was feeling, she was probably feeling kind of lonesome in the work of doing it and was keen to sort of collaborate with people. But I think it's sort of just fair to say she lost interest maybe after like a little bit, or didn't feel like this was the sort of artistic agenda that she was maybe interested in pursuing for herself. And so she just kind of said that she wasn't going to be involved pretty early on. But yeah, Jesse was involved at the beginning, and she's on the Attack and Black Baby Eagle split record. She sings a duet, and Jesse's still a friend, and like, but yeah, just kind of was involved a little bit at the beginning when we were all sort of working on getting this thing going, and then she wasn't.
Yeah, between Kehoe and Steve and me, we used to sort of, I mean, because it was, you know, it was just sort of all coming together. And so we would have discussions about it. And I don't think there were real roles assigned. It was just like, should we do this? Okay. And then how do we do it? I do remember deciding to cut some financial corners and self-assemble the AIB Baby Eagle split, which is a terrible mistake. Because I remember being on tour, in fact, specifically upstairs at the Apollo in Thunder Bay, assembling, like folding and double-sided taping LP covers on the road. I don't know why we would ever do that, but that's what we were doing. Maybe we got them really late and had to take them, but anyway, we get them assembled in-house now. That I know for sure.
I didn't really think to like what was entailed in like having and running a business so much, and like wanted to help out in any way I could. But quickly, like, my contributions were just purely creative after a certain point. And yeah, Steve is able to amazingly wear both hats in that way.
I think it just sort of morphed. I mean, like, Attack in Black broke up, and then I think I was the first to do a solo record, and then at that time, it just made sense to just keep working with Steve because we had a great relationship in that way. So that kind of just transformed that part of the relationship to, like, a, you know, as the at the time sole creative person in the project, working with Steve as the label side specifically, that dynamic shift that sort of naturally occurred kind of just held, honestly, even though, like, obviously I admire Steve as an artist more than almost anyone, and I think he's the greatest, that the sort of work dynamic sort of took more of a artist label relationship. And then Kehoe shortly thereafter followed suit and started Marine Dreams and put out a bunch of records like that. So it just kind of became that Steve just took the wheel and we're all better off for it.
It is hard work, yeah. What do I get out of this? I find the people that I'm working with very artistically stimulating, and I admire the way that they work and the work that they make. And so for me as an artist, I find that, yeah, inspiring. I sometimes wish that I had someone like myself that I could relate to in the same way and, like, sort of rely on to do some stuff and to give me, like, the words, the sincere words of encouragement that I do give others. And I do get that from some of the relationships, for sure, within the label sort of context, because we are all in relationship with each other. And that manifests differently and it changes over time. And it has all the sort of regular complexities and challenges and rewards that being in relationship with people has. But so if I evoke loneliness, it's sometimes that, like, you know, you wish there was somebody else there doing the QuickBooks with you or whatever. I don't know.
My name is Jimmy Kilpatrick, and I play under the name Shotgun Jimmy, and you can find me on YC001 of the You've Changed Records catalog, among other titles, but notoriously YC001. You know, it's one of my greater achievements in life, I would say. I'm joking, but I'm not joking. I'm really proud to be on that record label and to be part of that family. And it's an honor to be YC001. It's just a coincidence that I happen to have an album in the can right at the moment when they were launching the label. I had always wanted to be on a record label since I was in high school. I thought it seemed like that was making it, like that was being successful or having a career was being on a label and being part of a family and sort of having a home. Because, I mean, I'm sure you can relate. Coming up in the 90s, I was introduced to music via labels. You know, I would be listening to Matador Records, and then just because this was sort of pre-internet for me, I would check out everything on the catalog, or I would listen to Mint Records and check out everything on the catalog. So the idea of being on a label or a roster with a bunch of other bands that are like-minded sort of seemed like it was the goal in life for me as a musician. And being on You've Changed Records has been that. Yeah, I didn't realize that I had it so figured out early on. Like, being on the label does mean all of those things for me. It does. I do feel like it is a family, and there is a community, and it's a supportive community, and it's just a great place to be making music. And not everyone has. I do recognize that there's kind of a privilege of being on a label. I did feel listless for a little while before it happened, and I know there's a lot of people out there making music that would love to be making it with their friends and part of a cohort of people. So that's why I think a lot of labels start that way, and I think You've Changed sort of started that way with the guys from Attack in Black and Steve Lampke just deciding that they wanted to have a home for the music that they were interested in for their friends. But then You've Changed has kind of blossomed. You know, it was really a friend label releasing sort of only friend bands for the first, I don't know how many, maybe less than 10 recordings, but then it branched out and it's sort of like anyone could be on You've Changed if they're nice and if they're easy to work with and they're friendly and they make good music that Steve and Dan are interested in, then they have a shot at it. It's not cliquey, which I really like about it. You know, it's like, it feels good to be part of the family, but it doesn't feel like a club. It's sort of inclusive in a lot of ways too. So far in the 15 years that I've been with You've Changed Records, I haven't had to look for any sort of buy-in. Steve will just ask me every once in a while, hey, what are you working on? Or are you working on anything? Or what are your plans? And then I just tell him what's going on. And then I just receive relentless support from him. And, you know, there are other folks that over the years, like Colin Medley has done a lot of stuff for the label. He's sort of an unsung hero who... he'll show up at your show and film it for you, or he's made videos for me. He's sort of archiving a lot of what's been happening in the last 15 years. So there's people that are sort of part of the community and the family that just sort of step up and support you and help you realize whatever vision you have.
My name is Colin Medley, and I've been taking photos and doing various video projects with most of the bands on You've Changed Records over the last 15 years. I didn't start quite at the beginning. I wasn't there for the, inception of the label, but my history with Steve and some of the other guys, Shock and Jimmy, even Julie I met before You've Changed Records, it's kind of a varied link to my own development as a photographer and a video filmmaker, whatever you want to call me.
Colin's kind of doing what he wants to do, the same way like any of the artists I'm helping release records with, like they're doing what they want to do and I'm trying to facilitate. It manifests a little bit as like promotional stuff with Colin, but it's like, it's not really, like it's like his, it's his art. Yeah, so his videos and his photos are his art, and he's amassed like an incredible like archive, and I hope that there's like some outlet for it all, you know, at some point.
So I ended up going to Sappy Fest in 2008, and that was the third Sappy Fest, and I kind of came at the invitation of Shock and Jimmy, who I'd gotten to know, and I stayed at the farm where he lived at the time, and that's where Attack and Black were staying, and Simone Schmidt with $100 at the time was staying there, and Steve was staying there, and Richard Laviolette was staying there. So it was really kind of, yeah, I mean, You've Changed Records hadn't started that, but you can really look to that as being sort of maybe the petri dish from whence the label came.
Yeah, Sappy Fest, I mean, it's obviously part of our kind of quote unquote like origin story. It was and is a place where people come together and meet without a lot of the sort of obstacles that often are in place at music festivals or festivals. And there was a real inspiring kind of grassroots energy around it, you know, in those early days. Like, and it was inspiring in the sense of like, it was a lesson in what was possible. Like they were just kind of throwing a party and inviting people in a way that like was really exciting, and it grew with all the best sort of intentions and ideas. So it was an inspiring thing like that, you know, and a lot of the people that I work with through the label now, like we've had our own relationships to that, and we've met there, or we're sort of part of that sort of scene and world that every summer Sappy kind of invited, you know, to Sackville.
I wanna be cool all the time and never ever not be cool.
If I have an album, I might ask Steve what he thinks the hit song is on it before we release it, and then he'll say, they're all hits, Jimmy. And then we'll pick one of them that we're going to lead it with as a single, and then maybe Colin steps in and comes out to a show or comes to a festival and hangs out and makes a video. And then The real thing from a sort of business standpoint is that then you have worldwide distribution, so then your music is available at record shops all over the world. And you know, Steve also helps try to get you some airplay and placements on Spotify or whatever it is, you know. Like, he doesn't, I don't know how much he does all of the stuff that a record label is supposed to do, but I don't have to think about that stuff a lot. Like, I don't have to do any of, I don't have to worry about the manufacturing or anything. I can make artistic decisions. Like, I want it to be on orange vinyl and I want it to be gatefold. And then he goes, ugh, cause that's expensive. I've never actually pitched the gatefold, but you know, we just get to make the decisions about what we want to make, how we want the art to look and sound, and then we just get undying support from the label for how to make it happen. And Steve's really good about like getting on the same level as the individual acts on the label and sort of making it happen for everyone in different ways, because we all sort of have different likes and dislikes and goals or not goals or various ways of being artists. So it is having an artist that understands that and can be sympathetic and is willing to meet you wherever you want to go with a project is really helpful.
There was never a plan, no need to explain, and here I am starting over again from the eyes of a baby.
My name is Julie Duaron, and I guess my collaboration with You've Changed Records goes back to when the Daniel, Fred, and Julie record came out. So I feel really lucky to have been among the early days. And not to mention, I have another record out with You've Changed that came out in 2021, the Julie Duaron record, I Thought of You. It's been my dream to be a You've Changed artist exclusively forever. And there was a little bit of time there where I had obligations to do things with pre-existing contracts, if you will. I've loved You've Changed forever, and I think it's the coolest label, and I love everything they do. And I think that they're just the whole aesthetic and the way they work and just the way the label exists always made me really envious, and I always really wanted to be on the label. And I actually never really realized I was on it. Like, obviously I knew that Daniel, Fred, and Julie came out on You've Changed, but like all these years that went by up until my last record came out, which was in 2021, I really had a strong desire to be on that label, and I had every intention to eventually put out a record on that label, but on this label rather. But I didn't believe, like, the Daniel, Fred, and Julie thing, because that was kind of like, it was a little bit Daniel's initiative and stuff. So I hadn't even really, like, it took me years to realize, like, oh yeah, I am on You've Changed.
I've been called a runner. I always leave my place, racing to another town, another face.
Daniel, Fred, and Julie was a more immediately successful record than either of the first two. It's a really great record, and I do think about it sometimes. I've been like, it's not that it's forgotten, like the people that like know that record actually do really cherish it, but like, you know, Dan's career has grown a lot sort of since then, and I feel like a lot of people that follow Dan's music don't know about that record. And I do think about like how to sort of reintroduce it in a way, because it's a really unique and special thing. It was really exciting to have her be a part of it like that. And I think it did probably open a bunch of doors in terms of how people were maybe relating to us. Like it may, yeah, you use the word legitimizing. It probably legitimized it somewhat. It also helped in that it was for our context at the time, like it was a successful record, you know, so it helped the next projects after that one happen, you know, and it helped sort of quote unquote like exposure and all that kind of stuff.
I had this fantasy of being on the label, and I'm glad that I think I finally am part of the roster, and I always was. I just didn't even real. I had like a few years there where I wasn't paying attention to anything in my life. I was just like existing.
Like Julie is such a legend, and Julie is legitimately like one of the most like kind of world class like artists. You know, Julie is absolutely incredible. When the Daniel Fred Julie record came out, like I knew Julie already for a number of years. She'd been playing with Jimmy and Fred and Shotgun and Jay Bird, and that's how I would have first kind of met Julie in any kind of real way. But, you know, I grew up listening to Eric's Trip, you know? We grew up listening to Eric's Trip, and Julie is totally magic. And I feel like everybody's got the same story, some variation of the story, where you meet Julie and you're so excited and in maybe intimidated because of who she is, how she sings, what she sounds like, what those records have all meant to you. And then Julie is one of the most grounded and grounding people you will ever have the pleasure of meeting. And the sort of dissonance between like your own excitement and Julie's like graceful but like hilariously like awkward way of like dispersing that is disarming. It's a disarming experience, and it's very common. I feel like nearly everyone working in music today has the same story, you know, about Julie.
I think what makes You've Changed so special is that it's an artist-run label and that it is run by artists and who aren't coming at it from like a business standpoint, you know? And I think that, and again, I'm sure they want to sell copies. Like everybody wants projects to succeed. And I can't speak for Steve or Daniel, or I can't speak for them, but I'm only assuming that when we spend money to make things, you want to kind of at least make it back. And then everybody wants the artist to succeed and to be like living, you know, a decent life. I think the fact that it's an artist-run label for sure makes it really appealing, and it makes it really special. And I think that's what I like about it. Because, yeah, artist-run label and working with other artists, I think it just makes it a really collaborative. It's just a big collaboration. So I think that's part of the success and what makes it appealing for me, at least, and for anyone who's working with the label, I think, or being on You've Changed. I think for me, they're all my friends, and I really am so grateful to have everyone who's part of You've Changed in my life that I can't imagine. I think that I would be devastated if for some reason I made a bad record. No, I don't think that would happen. But I mean, I might make a bad record. But anyway, I mean, I just was at Steve's house a few months ago for dinner, and I ran over a few ideas with him actually just recently about, because I'm ready. I have enough songs for a new album and I'm trying to decide how I want to go about it. And I'm trying to decide whether to do it, because I have this fantasy of doing it solo by myself in my little cabin in my backyard. And I want to record everything by myself. And I'm in my 50s now. And I feel like the first thing I ever did was when I was 18 in my bedroom, I borrowed Rick's 4-track and I did it all by myself. And I want to experiment like that again. Like I kind of wanted to see what that would be like. And so I was discussing that with Steve, but I also, there's the idea where I could do it again, like Daniel offered, like I could, there's so many different options, like I could go to so many places. So yeah, I've recently been kind of mulling ideas over with Steve, and he's just always there for me as a friend first. Like yes, he was running the label and I'm sure wanted to make sure that he helped me make decisions that I was going to feel good about and that he'd feel good about, but it always felt like I was just talking to a really good friend.
Richard LaViolette was a beautiful songwriter and person and musician. And when I first encountered his music, I heard an incredible amount of mystery and magic. And I heard like worlds in it, you know, it would have been little less like a rock, a little more like home, you know, in the sort of hand-sewn CD jacket on the one that I had, like a fairly poorly screen-printed, you know, cover. But there was just such an imagination and such a skill in there, and I could hear in the words and in the way it was presented and the way it was made and the way that Richard was when I met him, like, I did feel such a kinship to the way that he was grounded in a community and grounded in an idea of community and relationship, and relationships. And when I encountered his work, I felt like it was a door into that, even though it was like a familiar thing to me in terms of like the type of community maybe that he was working in, like it felt like a revelation too, because it opened that specifics to me. And I always find that really exciting in art, you know, and when I hear something that opens up into like another viewpoint or another world, it feels like such a gift. And Richard was sort of tapped into that, like he had that sort of ability and skill to sort of, you know, capture worlds within his work and to sort of communicate worlds from, you know, through his work. He was a couple years younger than me, but like we were kind of in the same thing. And I forget where I first met Richard. I think it might have been at a show in Hamilton, and that we were just ended up on the same bill and kind of got to know him sort of relatively slowly over a year or two, and just really grew to more and more love his work. And when we started You've Changed, like pretty early on, like I had the thought of like, oh, this is somebody that might be really fun to work with, like, you know, and that I didn't know how Richard was thinking about things or feeling about things, but like it might be really interesting to sort of extend like the platform to him, you know. And he gave me a CDR of what the Oil Spills record, I guess it was the finished version, I'm pretty sure, but it wasn't the, like he had pressed CDs at some point, but this was just a CDR, so I don't think it had come out yet. I don't know, I just love the record so much, like instantly, like it had all those things I loved about A Little Less Like a Rock, but extended further, and sort of the bigger band, sort of the community sort of groundedness being really like exemplified actually in the sound of that, you know, with a lot of voices and a lot of people playing. And it's still to this day one of my favorite records. And yeah, we asked him about putting out a vinyl, a record of that.
Like 2 nights ago, Carson and I put All Your Raw Materials on the Richard LaViolette record, and it's still absolutely perfect. Totally moving, sounds incredible, which is, you know, not surprising given the clientele. But yeah, I mean, that record's still amazing. And what is that, YC003? It's real early, I forget. It's in the front six. I don't know exactly what number, but it's an early one.
Yeah, he was sort of the first one, the first person we worked with, like outside of like, you know, Jimmy and Daniel and myself and Ian, you know, like Richard was the first artist sort of beyond our like very immediate little circle. And we did 2 records with him. We did the Oil Spills record, All of Your Raw Materials, and then in 2017, Taking the Long Way Home.
Well, I wrote a song for him that I sent to him, and then I actually have also written one since his passing for him as well that no one's heard. But the one that I wrote for him, I sent to him. And in my mind, it was always meant to be for him. Like, I had started writing it when he reached out and said what his plan was. And then I had started, like, trying to write it then. And then I was kind of getting, like, a little bit blocked up, you know. And then, but then when I knew the date he had chosen, I kind of had to hustle into, like, I didn't really know how to say to him what I wanted to say, or nobody probably knew how to say, or maybe some people did. I mean, everybody has their different ways of handling things. So yeah, I did. I wrote like a little song that I worked on out in my yard, and then I finally sent it to him. And I know that I think a few people have heard it, and then like about a week after he passed, I started writing something new for him. It was like, I kind of ended up, it was like almost writing him a letter. And I don't know how to proceed with, well, the first song I had written in my intention was, it was like for him so that he would know he was loved and still is loved. And then the one I'm writing now, or I started writing, is it could be done if I just kind of stepped away from it, because I don't know how to proceed with those types of songs, because I don't want to be making it about me. You know what I mean? So I was writing them for Richard, I guess, as a way to process like grieving. And the first one was a note to him. And the second one was like my way of processing the passing of a really special person who's a friend. And I think, I don't know, I guess that would be a conversation I'd have with Steve too, because I wouldn't want to record a song. I guess I've always been uncomfortable about trying, like when I have made songs for specific things, whatever, I don't want, does this make sense? Like, I don't want, like if I make a song for Richard, I don't want it to be about me. You know, I don't, like, it's kind of weird, but I want, I guess I would like to share those songs. Like, maybe it would be nice, because it would be like a, it's a way to actually share the love with the people who love, like Richard.
And his final record will come out this year, All Wild Things Are Shy, which he completed in the months before his passing. And we're aiming for September for the release of that. It'll be a double LP, and it's a very, very beautiful and very heavy gift that Richard left on his way out.
I mean, I'm excited to hear about it, to hear it. And I mean, I'm doing as well with it as you might expect. It's just sort of, you know, these are the strange realities of life, and it's difficult. And I'm glad that there's plenty to be celebrated and re-experienced from his brilliant yet short time with us.
Our place in this world. Oh, oh, oh. Fingers touch my nose, fingers touch my hair. I cannot work these things when I'm numb and unprepared. These are not my hands, this is not my skin. Does this not feel like someone else we're in?
Hey, thanks for listening to Creative Control, as always. As you may have heard me mention, I recently lost my day job, and I've had a few conversations with people since who've said, you had a day job? I thought your podcast was your day job. When I explained why it hasn't been my day job to a friend, he suggested I should share some of this information with people like you listening right now. So, in short, unless they have some giant exclusive million-dollar contract, podcasters are not paid to make stuff by companies like Apple and Spotify. Podcasters do not make any money from streaming royalties. Ad revenue is dependent on a certain threshold of downloads each month, and even if your show is accessed 30,000 times a month, the income you get is actually really minimal. So podcasters like me usually make time in our lives to support our communities and our interests to make these shows, and our most reliable source of income for this work is in fact crowdfunding. In my case, it's my Patreon. So if you'd like to receive ad-free episodes earlier than everyone else, regular newsletters and blog posts, bonus audio content, and support my work, quite literally, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I don't have first-hand knowledge, but I do have a memory of having first-hand knowledge. And the way that I understand it is that it's like a St. Catharines kind of welland expression coming specifically from a group of people. And it's just that sort of classic, like, you've changed. I think it was a bit of a diss, you know, at the beginning.
You know, I was actually thinking of that yesterday. I think about that all the time. And then I always get that Shotgun Jimmy song in my head. Where like you've changed, I'm not gonna sing it right now. And I mean, does it come from his song? I don't know where it comes from. I wonder. Gosh, did he? I just assumed he threw that into the song because of "You've Changed." But the Shotgun Jimmy with Attack and Black backing him up. That's the first "You've Changed" album, right? Is that 001? So I would be curious to know whether he found out what the label was going to be called or whether they named the label after that lyric. That, you know, I think logically, I bet I'm just going to guess here that it could have come up in a van on tour with Shotgun Jimmy and Attack in Black. Maybe Jimmy and Dan. I don't know if Steve was. I'm not sure. I'm just going to guess that they got it from the lyric from the Shotgun Jimmy song. But you know what? Maybe that song came later. I can't remember what album that's on because everything goes mixed up in my head. I don't know where the lyric came from. I mean, not the lyric, but the record label name came from. Do you know? Has anyone told you? You must know.
Seen the sunshine in 10 days on. She spoke to me about my skin and how I look so young.
I mean, Marine Dreams was an incredible, incredible project, incredible band. This became very clear to me pretty early, like when I met the Attack in Black people. Like, they had a lot of ideas and they had a lot of like curiosities and a lot of like artistic ambitions, you know, like, and they were just kind of shooting off in every kind of direction, like through great enthusiasm and passion and like a lot of skill, you know. So Ian's songwriting has changed in many, many ways, like over the years, you know, as has Dan's, like as has Spencer's, you know. Like,
the most recent record I put out was a collaboration with a friend named Luca Koplowski, which did come out on another label. Stylistically much different than where the label usually goes. And yeah, I suppose the last record that I released was in maybe 2019. So just before the pandemic.
It was really exciting. Like, that first Marine Dreams record is incredible. As is the other Marine Dreams records, like, you know, but it evolved like pretty fast. Like, Ian's a, like I say, very artistically ambitious, and like he's a curious guy. Like, so he's looking at different things and getting excited about different things.
And I mean, currently I have no role actively with the label aside from just friend of everyone and fan of everyone.
That sort of motion through those albums it's in those albums, you know, it's there and it's very exciting. And, you know, I hope, I hope Ian kind of comes back to making music publicly again for sure.
I'm Adrian, and I play in a band called Apollo Ghosts. So I think this was around 2009 or 2010, and I was the songwriter in residence for Sappy Fest that year. I don't know how that happened, but somebody gave me the keys to a house and, 2 weeks to kind of fool around. So that's, I think, when I met Steve Lamke from You've Changed Records, was that summer. And that's kind of how I got involved, I guess. Yeah, so I was at the festival. I was just kind of hanging around in Sackville. And I remember, playing some basketball with Steve and going to see an outdoor movie at the drive-in there with a bunch of cool people, nice people. And I started to, get to know Steve. And I may not even have known he was running the label, or I certainly didn't know that he played in the Constantines, which was a band that, I didn't really know. And so, yeah, it was just a genuine friendship that kind of emerged that summer. And then, I find out these details, during that time. And then we had a record that we were working on, the Ghosts were working on. And I think I just said, hey, would you be interested in helping us put it out? And, he was very enthusiastic and was like, yeah, absolutely, let's do this. And I think it was really that simple. We were pretty staunch, DIY folks. When the band first started, we had some interest from labels and from different places, but I think we were pretty, stubborn and didn't really want to relinquish any kind of control over what we were doing. But when I met Steve, it just felt like what they were doing at You've Changed felt really, organic and non-commercial and interesting. And all the artists, that were on it at that time were, I was fascinated with. And so, yeah, it just felt like a natural thing to kind of want to work with them. I'm probably a pretty frustrating person to work with, because I do a lot of the things myself. And sometimes Steve is like, well, you've done everything here, so what do you want me to do? And it feels like being part of some kind of family. And I don't think I necessarily have carte blanche to put out an album of burping sounds or something. But I think he's just a fan. I don't want to say a fan of the band, but just, he likes what we make and is just happy to give it a little corner on the internet and sort of champion what we do. And so really I don't think there's any contracts. I've never signed anything. He takes care of stuff that I don't really like doing anymore, like doing distro or, mailing things out. And so he's just such a sweet person. And, obviously on a pretty small scale for us, but it's just great. I've always felt like the kind of, weirdo West Coast cousin that, shows up in his, Hawaiian shirt and doesn't quite fit, I think, as far as I know, we're the only band from the West Coast. And yeah, I don't know, I just feel so lucky that there's any interest whatsoever in whatever we're doing. But it just feels like a home, base, like a family, I genuinely love all the artists on the label and, count a lot of them as friends. And I love when a new artist on the label puts something out. I'm stoked to hear it and to help, promote it in whatever way I can. Or, sometimes people collab on each other's songs. It's just, it's really cool. I think it's the platonic ideal of what I think a record label should be. Yeah. I can't emphasize enough, how kind of a person Steve Lamke is and Daniel, for doing this. And from the moment, I met him in probably some field in Sackville, to now, he's just been a constant supporter and you know, champion in the corner of this band and many other, you know, I think really great bands. So I just, yeah, I love him. I love him like a brother, and he's, I just can't say enough about the label. It's incredible.
Sherritt, and I play in The Burning Hell.
My name is Matthias Kahn, and I play in The Burning Hell, too.
We had put together an album called Garbage Island that we thought was good. We had previously worked with Headless Owl Records in the Yukon, but they were kind of out of commission by the time we were doing Garbage Island. And our dream label for it in Canada, we have a European label that handles most of our worldwide stuff, but we really wanted to have a Canadian label because we are a Canadian band. So we approached Steve about it in 2021. So we're relatively new members of the You've Changed roster.
But we're just spring chickens.
Happy to be here.
We probably met everyone involved directly or peripherally with You've Changed at Sappy Fest in one way or another over the years. And Ariel is going to probably correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think we would have met Steve first in 2008, 2007, something like that. It was a while ago now. And I think we've definitely been aware of You've Changed since they started. Always been a fan. Always been an admirer of Steve's work and all the artists that he's put out on You've Changed Records. Yeah, it's been like long time listener, first time caller kind of situation, I guess.
Well, we had also already toured with a lot of the bands on the label. We've had like long-standing relationships with Shotgun Jimmy, we first toured with in 2010, and then have toured with several times since then. Currently, we're making an EP with Jimmy and going on another tour. We toured with Steve a bunch from, yeah, maybe around the same time, maybe 2012 or something, and Ian Kehoe, Marine Dreams, and yeah, maybe
Richard LaViolette.
Oh yeah, and of course Richard for sure. So we already had touring and creative relationships with a lot of the people on that label. And so we were definitely fans of them and fans of just about everybody else peripherally or whatnot involved. It does feel like a community, which is the big appeal, I guess, in why we reached out to Steve, too, is it can be very lonely being an independent musician and having the sense of community and camaraderie is priceless.
A long time ago, in a land far away, Headless Owl Records and You've Changed Records got a whole bunch of people together up in Whitehorse, and we made this really fun collaborative album. Everybody brought a song, and we all kind of played on each other's songs, and it was so much fun. And the record was called, or the band, I guess, that we made together was called Community Theater, and the album was called Northern Register. And we did a few shows up in the Yukon, and that was it. And it came out with beautiful artwork by Sherry Boyle, and still remains one of my favorite projects I've ever been a part of.
I mean, I can't speak to the other artists on You've Changed exactly, but I can speak to Steve in particular because, you know, there's no group chat, at least I'm not invited. So I don't have like, I have friendly relationships with other artists on You've Changed and we often talk shop and I feel like there is support there. But Steve is someone in particular who I trust and who magically, in a world that of the music business that wants to kind of blow smoke off everyone's butt and give false dreams and false expectations while also not working. He is the opposite. You know, he works hard and he's realistic. Not to say that he's not kind and supportive. He is very much that too, but he's not, he doesn't bullshit, which is a really real relief in this industry. He doesn't, yeah, he's a realist, but he's also an optimist at the same time in a lot of ways. You know, he's willing to try it. He's willing to go for it always, but to keep expectations real and on the ground. And I really appreciate it. You know, I feel like because of that, yeah, he's someone that I trust and someone whose advice and expertise I'm always willing and glad I seek out that wisdom and that expertise. And that to me is, I love all the other bands in it, and it feels like a great thing to get to be a part of a roster like that. But Steve is You've Changed to me, and I think he is You've Changed, and he is the heart of it, and he rightly so, because he's really he's supportive, and he's good for that. He's good for having a chat. He's good for talking through things and coming up with ideas, and he puts the work in behind all of it too, which I appreciate, because a lot of people are all talk and no action, and Steve is not. And yeah, I admire him.
It's been a dream.
Yes.
It's been a dream. It's so refreshing to work with someone who is so resourceful and diligent and understanding and just, yeah, like Ariel said, there's no smoke being blown up anyone's butts. There's no butt smoke. Steve does not play the butt smoke game at all. And that is like that's a terrible way of phrasing this. But it is such a gift to work with someone like that. Because you want, obviously, like, what's a label for? Well, a label partly is for a feeling that like someone out there is rooting for you, right? But like, sometimes I think that people can get kind of carried away with the thought that like, oh, now I have a record label, and therefore like that's how I'm on at the next echelon of fame and fortune is just down the road or whatever. And Steve is great at sort of, you know, fostering that sense of encouragement and whatever, but also like, you know, talking in real terms about the real challenges that he's facing, that the label's facing, that other artists are facing. And then everyone's just on the same page, and there's no bullshit, and it's great. There's a sense of solidarity and fairness and forward-thinking creativity. I love it. Love that man.
Hey, I'm Nigel, and I play in Napis.
Yeah, my name is Josh, and I play in Napis.
We started as a band somewhere around 2011 and started to make our own recordings sometime around that time. Basically, we had finished recording Thought Rock Fish Scale, which was our second album that we also self-recorded with the help of our friend Mike Wright. And we had never worked with a label before, and the one we felt might be a kindred spirit in terms of the culture of artists that were coming out from the label was You've Changed. It just seemed like it was a natural fit for us. And then with Steve, I don't know if any of us knew him personally. At that time, I didn't. But we felt from impressions of him that maybe he would be interested to work with us.
Yeah, Steve definitely understood from the artist's perspective, maybe more. It was probably obvious to him how being in a band works. So it was easy to talk to him about anything related to that, I suppose.
So then we reached out to Steve, and from the beginning, he was so kind and extremely supportive and encouraging. I had very few expectations going in, and I assumed that we wouldn't have much success in reaching out to people. And then Steve was, from the very outset, so supportive and encouraging, and also immediately enthusiastic about working with us. So at that early stage in our career, that really changed things for us in a pretty huge way.
I feel very happy about the role that they took on as our archivists, or however you would want to frame it. I feel like labels often give context to what you're doing, and I feel like contextually our band makes sense on that label, if that scans at all. I feel like it's kind of something maybe hard to put into words, but I feel like it was a good fit just with the other bands like that were on the label are bands that I either grew up seeing or were part of like a wider community that I wasn't necessarily always a part of, but that felt like was concurrent. And, you know, there were like, we crossed over with people often enough. It felt like, you know, the best parts of what a community can be.
Something that stood out from the very beginning working with Steve and with You've Changed was, well, I'll call it an element of emotional support and enthusiasm, kind of like a sense of having someone that cares about you and cares about what you're doing and believes in it. This, to me, I would say, is probably the most prominent aspect of working with a label partner.
I'm really proud of those records. You know, I hadn't listened to I'm Bad in quite a long time, and I put it on, and I can't remember why, but like maybe 6 weeks ago or something, and I thought it was fantastic. Fantastically good record. Like, I think when I think Nap Eyes, I think, oh, Thought Rock Fish Scale, I think of like Lion and Chains, I think of Mixer and like all those tunes, and for some reason, like, I'm Bad is not the first thing I think of, but when I listened to it, I was like, this record is amazing. Like, I'm like, I love those guys.
I think the major reason that we maybe left was because we were trying to get better federal granting or something. I would say, to be honest, I would say that we made a huge mistake. Yeah, I think that was it. Basically, we were looking to try and get more cash. We were just trying to change. I think we wanted to see if we could go bigger in some sense, but I wouldn't say it worked out.
We misunderstood this aspect. It was probably one of those things where if we'd looked into things more, we would have made a different decision. But I think at the time we had some mistaken assumptions about how things worked. Specifically, we thought that by signing with the label we were signing with, this would mean we would automatically qualify for some federal funding, basically, that would help us to make touring more economically feasible, helping us to deal with some of the high overhead that, of course, all musicians face. And there are these systems in Canada that offer this kind of grant funding if you can qualify for it, which is a huge help to Canadian artists. And Steve had been very instrumental in getting us access to some funding from our provincial music organization, Music Nova Scotia. So anyways, what Josh is pointing to is we just didn't really understand what was going on with the grant stuff. And then only later we had the experience of, oh, why did we do this? And this was a kind of cautionary tale to, you could say, to read the fine print.
My feelings were not in relation to the final decision to not work together anymore, but my feelings, which I will identify publicly as frustration, was about the lack of communication that led to that decision. So I was bummed that we didn't communicate through that process. And I will say that I did my best to communicate through that process. You know, they thought they had different opportunities that they wanted to pursue, and that's great. You know, I have no ownership over any of this, any of these relationships. Like, relationships are multi-partied by definition, right? So I love those guys. I love their band.
I'd like to thank Steve for giving me a Roberto Bolaño book of poetry. And I'd like to apologize for not giving him the book of poetry that I had on me that he asked about, because I was, you know, if I could go back, I'd probably just give it to him and buy a new copy.
Maybe I can second Josh's gesture here. Well, I don't know. I don't have one of those specifically related to a book loan. But yeah, really just to say we love you, Steve. And this is a pleasure to participate in. So thanks, Vish, for inviting us. Feel lucky. Feel glad to be here.
A My name is Lucy Niles, and I'm in a band Partner.
I'm Mar Sellers, and I manage a band called Partner, who are signed to You've Changed.
We started working with You've Changed in 2015, I think. And at the time, Jose and I, my bandmate, we were going through a big Katie Lang kick. So we were at the bar one night, and we told somebody there that we were writing new songs inspired by Katie Lang. So, like, very loosely inspired. But then whoever it was told Steve that we were writing songs that sounded like Katie Lang. And I'm pretty sure that was what, like, maybe he was, like, intrigued by that or whatever. And then, obviously, whatever we came up with, it didn't sound like Katie Lang at all. But by that point, I guess, I don't know, he'd already talked to us about it. But yeah, honestly, it's kind of hard to remember. It was a while ago, but it's been a great partnership. I think we duped Steve, like, maybe a couple different times. We actually prank called Steve on a record. I don't know if you recall. I think he hated it. And again, like, Steve is such a nice guy. He's the last person that you want to prank. So it was really diabolical.
When I started managing Partner, they were already on You've Changed. They had put out a cassette called Healthy Release. And because Partner are originally from Sackville, New Brunswick, and You've Changed has such a, like, that's almost a You've Changed home base, let's say. They were highly involved. And so I actually didn't meet Steve Lamke from You've Changed or Colin Medley or any of those people until I started working with Partner. But here's a little anecdote. I realized my old band, the Ewoks from Vancouver, played with the Constantines back in, like, I don't know, 2002 at the Piccadilly Pub in Vancouver. So technically Steve and I have shared a stage, but over 20 years ago.
I can only speak to my own bias as a recording artist, but I would say the thing I love about You've Changed is the amount of, like, creative control and trust, because I haven't been on any other labels, but I don't know if that's that common for the person just to, like, trust you to put out stuff and not, like, tell you that it should sound a certain way or anything like that. And yeah, like, I feel like just, like, having, like, a community kind of approach, but also, like, a trusting, like, hands-off kind of approach. Like, the mix of that I find to be really great. Yeah, because we've been able to do all kinds of weird stuff that I don't know if, like, just anyone would be down with.
You've Changed, I would describe as one of the most artist-friendly labels in Canada or the world. And you can tell because it's run by people who are musicians. So they know, you know, it's fair, it's handshake deals. And it was really a community. And I feel like it's a, even though I know the founder is from Ontario, there seems like a real East Coast vibe to it. I always say managing bands is like a marriage and about trust. You know, people have contracts or whatever, or they, a lot of manager and band people have handshake deals as well, you know, and it's kind of how we work with You've Changed. It's a handshake deal, which a lot of people would be freaked out about. But it's about trust and respect, and so far it's going good. No one's screwed anyone over. Yeah, I feel like that's just so, you know, important in our sort of smaller independent music industry, is you're sharing such limited resources to try and make music and put it out. If you can't have, like, trust of each other, then you're not in a good situation.
It's kind of hard to keep up with what's needed to do as a band these days, to be totally honest. You know, like, obviously there's TikTok. I don't know if You've Changed this TikTok. And they've never asked us to do one. So yeah, I don't know if I'm the best one to say, because I don't know if I'm that up on exactly what it takes right now. But yeah, like, I feel like, yeah, like, I think they can roll with the times.
I don't really, like, direct or encourage, I would never direct or encourage, like, specific approaches to social media or self-promotion. I will say, like, you have to do something. I'm not going to say what it is, you know, because it's, ideally, all this stuff, and it includes, like, the administration of the label, but, like, also, like, the self-promotion stuff. Like, ideally, like, we're bringing our sort of sense of creativity and fun and curiosity and engagement to all of that stuff, which is just to say, like, it doesn't make sense to me to like make some big social media plan or scheme. Like, it's like, it's got to be an expression of the artists if they're going to be on social media. But at the same time, like, it's becoming less effective, like, every day. So I don't know, like, there's some kind of shift on the horizon about what that's going to look like. Like, Facebook used to be a really effective way to tell people about shows. It used to be a really effective way to tell people about records. And it's not anymore. It's a waste of time. Like, I feel like Instagram was an effective way to tell people about stuff and to sort of create a sense of, like, what you're doing as an artist. But I feel like it's becoming less and less effective by the day. You know, like, all these things. So, like, those are specifics, but it just sort of reiterates the idea that, like, the stuff's always changing. You always got to be sort of creative-minded about it.
I feel like the role of the label in this time, like what I think of when I think of why labels are still important, is I look at them as brands, you know. They're kind of curator, cultural, like, brands, you know. Like, if you sign to a certain label, usually they've built an aesthetic or, like, a sound, and people kind of know what that means. Like, oh, you're on this label. Okay, cool. I might like that band. And that's why I think it's still important for independent bands, like, or new bands, emerging bands, to maybe be on a label, because the two things it can help is, like, kind of define your aesthetic and who you are and get you in front of the right people. Also, then you have more people on your team cheerleading you, essentially, and talking about, the more people on the team talking about your music, the better. But yeah, if I was, like, a successful independent artist, I probably wouldn't use a label. I just keep 100% of the, why split it with someone, you know, if you've already got a fan base, there's no point. I don't think labels make sense for established artists anymore.
I just say, like, I'm very proud to be on You've Changed. I'm a big fan of everyone on You've Changed, and I appreciate all of the great music and the great times that they have facilitated over the last 15 years, which is actually really wild that it's been that long. I can't believe that.
I can say Partner are busy finishing their third album, which is going to come out on You've Changed Records. And it's going to be quite a surprise, I think, to everyone, as every Partner record is. I just want to say, I hope You've Changed is around for a few more years, because they're so lovely. I don't know. You've changed.
You've changed. Well, where the label names come from? Actually, I have no idea. I've never asked Steve that question. Or was it like a Julie Duran lyric or something, or Eric's Trip lyric? Maybe that's what it is, or I don't know. I'm not really sure. That's a great question. I don't know if I've ever asked Steve that. Or maybe it's from one of his poems, or...
Well, wasn't there a song called You've Changed? But maybe not from there. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I just remember, like, the first time I became aware of You've Changed was from the t-shirts. Like, they had that super iconic gray t-shirt that everybody had. Yeah, but I don't know. What's the answer?
I don't actually know the answer to this, but I always love the fact that there's that mural painting on Queen West in Toronto by Dovercourt that has a big You've Changed block letters sign. And whenever I pass that, I think of You've Changed Records. So I'm going to go with the mural in Toronto as my answer.
Many years ago, in a different place, in a very special way.
My name is Jesse Harris. I created an artwork that reads You've Changed on Queen Street West in Toronto. There's a public art call in Toronto facilitated by the city. My friend and art dealer, who's named Simon Cole, helped coordinate a submission where I'd published a book years previous with all manner of sloganeering in it. We went through, selected You've Changed out of there. So that was something that I'd made all kinds of artwork when I was at school in, say, 2005, maybe printed. And basically we pitched on this great wall that seemed like no one had any great interest in. And that was the best selection. I certainly didn't come up with the term. It's like a familiar, like, You've Changed, man. but I printed some letterpress artwork and exhibited in 2005 pieces that in a frame that say, "You've changed." I'd also printed ones that said, "You changed, man," in like a rainbow roll, like maybe Rasta scheme that I thought were too silly at the time, or not even problematic, just stupid. So yeah, there's a book that has quite a bit of this work worked into it that I published when I did my first show with the Gallery Y Show. And that's, I can't even remember when that came out. I think I'd made in 2007 and it didn't get printed for quite a number of years. But the artwork is from like 2005, possibly 2006. Quite a long time has passed and it's taken on a life of its own. Around the time it was painted, it coincided with kind of the birth of hashtags, or this kind of like quip that had no relationship to like my intention, but I feel like that's what kind of helped people taking photos underneath. My intention was at least double meaning on, you know, a myth that like this is where the arts community, you know, had dominated and let's bump uglies with them. And so I would say it was as much of like a diss track as it happened to also be where the what's now known as CAMH, which stands for the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, which I think when I was growing up was known by its great address of 999 Queen West. Yeah, it was intended as a supportive message for people in that community. I never really felt like I had a popular phrase, like I had any personal authorship of. At some point, I certainly known there was a label with this name. To be honest, I didn't know it was older than even the painting of the mural. So that's news to me. I think for our generation, I would personally credit some earlier Simpsons, which I haven't seen probably in this century, if anyone is accredited. It's the fucking bus driver. Yeah, isn't it? You've changed, man. It used to be about the music. I hope it's been great advertising or like cross promotion.
Yeah! Ian Romano here from Dan Romano's outfit, and I've played on many releases on You've Changed, and
Including the first one,
and I'm happy to be involved.
Hello, my name is Carson McCone. I am a member of Daniel Romano's outfit. We are on You've Changed Records, and I've had the honor and pleasure of playing on a handful of You've Changed releases, and I'm happy to be here.
Hi, I'm Tommy. I play in Daniel Romano's outfit, whom have records on You've Changed.
Yeah. I think a label would be good in my mind where it functions as, you know, just trying to help the band to the best of their abilities and not basically just signing bands because the band has already done the work and you just want to take 50%.
I would say that as an artist, it is nice to work with other artists, and because I think ultimately you're sort of coming from similar space, you know, so if you're working with someone who understands that and can facilitate your vision in that way, that's really important. You know,
you basically have that with both labels you work with, which is nice.
Yeah, it's cool to have a label that is started by artists instead of somebody necessarily start, because they want to facilitate the release of either their music or their friend's music, music that they're passionate about, instead of just like, how can I make a buck in this industry?
Yeah.
You know, that's not the catalyst for any of these ventures. And that seems profoundly important to a long relationship.
Totally.
With a label.
And money sort of posers.
To me, it is important and sort of defining characteristic of what this is that it is artist run and that I continue to be a practicing artist. That gives me experiences and I don't know, a peership with the people that I'm working with that allows a unique and particular way of relating to each other and a particular kind of understanding. And I do think that is part of what makes me good at this job that I've sort of made for myself, if we want to even call it a job. But I think of that as a positive thing. What it gives me as an artist is it gives me an opportunity to engage deeply with these people's work, you know, whether that's Leanne's work or Richard's work or Dan's work or Matthias and Ariel's work or whoever it is, you know, like it does give me opportunity to really like to think about it and engage with it sort of on a deep level.
I don't know, it's, I guess, not genre specific like most labels I've worked with, like in the punk kind of world, which is nice. It's very inclusive in that way.
That's a good point.
It just seems like it's very carefully curated and just tasteful.
I love working with Steve. I mean, I think it's probably important for any label to have people working there that are either in active bands or have been active in active bands. I would argue this not even just within a label, but like all across the music industry, because if you don't know what it's actually like to function as a band, then you can't make decisions correctly for the band. And You've Changed is fantastic at making long-term decisions that are the best for the artists and the label.
Because I met Steve through Daniel and the Outfit. Something that I think about often is when records are released on You've Changed, Steve oftentimes, obviously, as, you know, the head of the label, will write a piece about this release or that release or whatever. And I've been so incredibly moved by some of the things that he's written. And it's poetry about this piece of art that he's a part of releasing, but it's not his artwork necessarily. And so to have somebody from your label be able to articulate why it is that they think that this art is important, I think is so special and incredibly unique. And it's hard to put words to stuff that you feel like, you know, you've created this work and then, and that it speaks for itself, but it's really, really lovely to have someone else who is basically representing you and facilitating the release of something to be able to articulate why they believe in it and think that it's important. And Steve does that. So thank you, Steve.
This is John McKeel, and I am an artist on You've Changed Records. Okay, by my recollection is I would have seen, you know, you've bands on that label play Sappy probably, maybe even before that. When did You've Changed Records, when was it founded? 2009. So I guess I would have seen Attack in Black play at Sappy, and it was really rad, and like I really loved it, and then I met Steve later through music again, but I guess I had a record to put out in 2017 called Memorial 10 Count, and Steve agreed to release it. And, you know, I was a fan of bands on the label, of course, and like knew Daniel a little bit and Steve a little bit. So, yeah, I think it was Steve who took a little chance and released Memorial 10 Count back in 2017. Well, I mean, it's significant in that they understand the work that needs to be done as people who are actually artists themselves. It's sort of like friends stuff. And also, it's a great label. It's world-renowned, recognized, lots of great artists on there. So, yeah, it's a great spot to be in. Definitely feels more maybe legit or something than some of the previous like smaller like labels, you know. So yeah, I think that they do a great job, you know, probably because of that, and also sort of, I guess, maintain a little bit more understanding and credibility, probably, like, in that world, like, having, like, to be working at the same time. Like, I don't pretend to understand even a lot of the stuff that's going on behind the scenes there, but I know that Steve does conferences and, like, he's got all kinds of relationships all over the world, and yeah, it's cool that he's out there doing that sort of, like, legwork and doing a great job. I would just say, hey, thanks for working with John McKeel, and looking forward to all the releases this year, and keep up the great work.
Hey, this is Adam Sturgeon from Status Non-Status. Well, one, I guess I never expected that You've Changed would ever sign me. They were very clearly my favorite label. And I was going through the process of making a record called Warrior Down, which I had sent over to Steve Lampke. He initially had told me that he didn't quite have the time or space to put it out. As I've learned that sometimes you just have other records that you have to prioritize. And then a few months later, he messaged me again and said, what's going on with that record? And I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know at all. I might not release it, period. And he was like, well, let's change that. And so we've all changed. And it's really cool for me, I think, and cool for, you know, some of my bandmates that, you know, have those artists that are so informative to, you know, they're like above us in a way, right? They're the leaders of the queue, and to be given the peer status is kind of like, whoa. Yeah, this is something that I definitely think about, the roles of labels now. And I have a couple different label relationships, and I think that each one sort of has its strengths and weaknesses, as it were, so to speak. And you know, what I really loved about You've Changed was the ability to sort of be DIY, but still have a foot in that necessary door. There's sort of like a ceiling on the different levels that you can sort of attain to, it feels like, in Canada. And, you know, certain opportunities, whether that's funding models or, you know, with You've Changed, it's also just like, you know, there's always people that will buy our record just because it's on You've Changed. So it's like a place to call a home. And I would still say that You've Changed sort of exists outside of that whole realm, though I think that we all need to think of new ways of doing things. But, you know, right now for me, that's actually making a record. So I'm kind of, you know, a bit of a holding pattern, watching how things are unfolding right now. Because, yeah, I do think that the landscape is really changing. And I think that labels specifically could do a lot of different things. But it's a question of whether we want to be participating in those things. And I think, you know, You've Changed is just that tried and true artist label that, you know, focuses on the music, which is also nice because I'm not a social media guru or a multimedia artist or an academic with fun audio projects that can receive large grants or anything like that. All the packaging, you know, was like something that really attracted me, how there's like this part of the DIY aesthetic is that, like, it didn't matter which band it was, you could sort of tell that it was a You've Changed release, whether that was putting the label logo on the front saying like I belong to this crew, or the sort of like classic 60s back cover. And I know that, like, as soon as we got signed, it was like, we're absolutely doing that. Like, can't wait. I just can't wait. And so, you know, I've got my You've Changed collection, and I love all the ones that, like, really have that similar vibe. And it's okay when they don't, but everyone listen, get your back covers in order. We can do this. You don't need that extra piece of art. You just need that good classic You've Changed back cover.
I mean, it's a good time to sort of acknowledge that, like, Dan's ongoing involvement is usually manifests like in an aesthetic thing, whether that's like, hey, man, like we should do a new t-shirt or something, or like, I want to do a poster for our 15th anniversary. And he and Dan will say, yeah, what do you want it to say? And then like have me a design in like an hour or whatever, you know. Definitely like the sort of early days, there was a bit of a consistency across the first like whatever it was, 10 or 12 sort of albums, which almost all of which Dan would have done the layout and artwork for. And it wasn't like a big heavy decision to do that, and it wasn't a big heavy decision to like abandon that like consistency of design. For Transistor's sister, Jimmy wanted to do his own thing. The first Apollo Ghost one we did, Landmark, also doesn't look the same. Like, Adrian wanted it to look the way that it looked, you know? So it was what the artist wanted. So I think there's some sort of balance between, like, aesthetic consistency and complete freedom, you know? It's definitely not imposed. If some, like, when Adam was working on the layout for Warrior Down, you know, it does recall some of the earlier You've Changed albums in the sense of having like the lyrics on the back and like the white sort of back panel, or primarily white back panel. That was something he wanted to do, you know.
I think that You've Changed represents the DIY qualities, so it's always that nice sort of umbrella to exist under. And I think that other people that follow the label see the artists in that way. And, you know, there's innumerable You've Changed artists that have represented that and continue to do so. Yeah. So I think it's amazing. I'm really fortunate, really. Our whole history as civilized people, as Canadian citizens or as citizens of the world, has asked us to make all sorts of different types of changes. But I think that we're, you know, we have to take steps. And so you have to be able to see where you come from to sort of envision like future endeavors. And so I feel like through You've Changed, I've always been able to take the right step forward. And whether it's been my left foot or my right foot, it creates a different subtlety that is still informed by the previous endeavor, you know? So like we sort of know where we're coming from. Well, yeah, just, you know, all the success to the future for sure. And big thank yous for including me and my crew in the process as well. All the love to Steve Lamke. You know, he's become an amazing friend. And I sort of appreciate that almost above all else. You know, we got to make the world go around. But when the people in your corner are like actually in it for you, it's really special. And I think for that reason, You've Changed can always succeed.
And I think the song helped me do that. I think that process of going, and I think Steve Lamke was also a really important person. We drove to Toronto one day and rented a studio, and I was like, just act like a producer right now. And I think he just held space. And for the whole day, I just sang that song into the mic over and over and over and over and over, and over again. And that was, I think, got me through. I don't even know if he would, I don't know what he would say about it actually, but I feel like that got me through whatever was blocking that part of it, and released or processed some of the grief and the emotion behind it, so that I could start to hear the song with new ears.
It's impossible to articulate how brilliant Leanne Simpson is and how important she is as a thinker, as a writer, as a living person, as a musician, as a poet. Theory of Ice is like a super important album. My relationship and friendship with Leanne is very important to me. You know, I think in terms of the context of the label and like that record is important. And I'm trying to think like how to articulate why it's important. Like part of it is just like the sort of artistic achievement and the sort of poetic world building rigor of it. And I think I sort of spoke in these terms like about Richard's work, like opening up worlds, Leanne contextualizing her work as being like made from an Anishinaabek worldview is similar. It's like, oh, so that means like I can get an insight into what that worldview is through listening to Theory of Ice. That's all I would ever want from art. Like, that's such a beautiful gift, you know? So to me, like, that is, for me personally, and I think for the label, like, it's a very significant release in that sense. To try and give all the background about why Leanne came to me and was already, like, such a hugely influential figure and important figure is maybe beyond, like, this doc or how, like, my ability to sort of speak about it, because it's sort of too big. But everyone should read her books.
I started working with Youth Change Records for my last full-length album, so that was 2019 is when that came out. It's called Fiverr with the Atlantic School of Spontaneous Composition, and I've worked with a lot of labels, and yeah, I met with Steve for a coffee one day and asked if Youth Change would put out my records. So Youth Change is run by Steve Lamke, who's like a musician who works right now. So it's really different to work in a context like with someone who knows what it's like to be working in the contemporary moment. But also Steve's been working as a musician for a long time, so you know, he's dealing with all the changes that have happened within the quote unquote music industry. And so it's, yeah, I think it's really nice to talk to someone who's aware of the changes that we're experiencing. And he doesn't really make us do anything. Like he never forces an approach. But I've worked on many labels that are like that. I think that there's just more of like a sympathetic understanding because he's experiencing the change too. I've worked with labels that are run by people who are, you know, watching the music industry change, and they've worked for a long time and they're kind of like annoyed with all the changes, just as we all are. It's really hard to watch the industry and experience the industry be demonetized. It's hard not to be cynical about putting out music, but those people aren't musicians, so they're not like compelled to try to figure out how to keep going, or they don't feel like an interest in a range of conversations about like how crummy it can feel sometimes. They are people who love music and steward music and have been generous with me. But there's a bit of a difference in that sense, because there's a bit of a push and pull, right? Like one of the major things I've lived through is the streaming becoming the main way that people are expected to put out music. And I was a late adopter of streaming, and that in part was because I worked with labels that allowed me to do that. Was that a good choice? Probably not. Was it a bad choice? Probably not. Maybe there's no good choice. But in a way, I think like coming around to figuring out how I wanted to put out music was like a difficult thing. And definitely working with people who resented the way in which the industry was changing without also feeling like the love of making music and the love of like wanting to keep on working, and that pressure as a counterpoint was made it sometimes hard to make decisions, if that makes sense. So yeah, I appreciate Steve like knowing what it's like. I hope to keep working with Youth Change, and I would love to be able to, you know, kind of riff even further on the artist run aspect of it and help support the release of other people's records in kind, you know? And I hope that Youth Change just can keep putting out records for as long as the people who do most of the work feel like they want to be putting out records. I feel really grateful that Steve welcomed me in that sense. I had this like funny moment with Shotgun Jimmy at Sappy Fest where he was like, isn't this great that we're like in the same Sappy Fest family? And I was like, Jimmy, like, I don't really use family as a metaphor. Like, we're at a music festival. I love the people here. And I feel really grateful to work with a label that doesn't try to be my family, but that just wants to be like good coworkers. And yeah, I feel like I hope we get to keep working together and support each other. Yeah. But like, I also don't want to tell Steve anything like indirectly through a podcast or something, but like, Steve, man, I hope that you feel like supported as you make other people feel, you know?
My name is Juliana Riolino, and I make records that come out on You've Changed Records. I joined Daniel Romano's outfit in, I think, 2018. I started recording on Daniel's records, which came out on You've Changed, and then I made my own record, which then came out on You've Changed. I was a fan of bands on the label. I was a fan of Steve Lamke and the Constantines, as many people were and are from the area. So I was a fan. I remember going to the Great Hall for, I think, a YC festival, and that was my introduction to that whole scene. I feel like there are other labels that can approach you that kind of try to paint the idea that they are, you know, an indie label that's artist run, that's artist first, but, you know, I think everyone's always looking out to get their pound of flesh, so, you know, that's what I mean. Like, there's really no pressure. It's real, like, the ball is really in your court. Like, if you want to do something, Steve is there for you to do it, and he's there to facilitate those things. But if I were to be like, I can't even imagine writing a record or recording another record or doing this or that, like, Steve would never be like, you need to, this is your obligation, you know. He's not like a big wig guy in a suit at a desk, you know, demanding that you create things. It's all very organic, and like I said, based in like mutual respect and, you know, understanding. I think You've Changed, you know, adapts to whatever the artist wants to do, which is, I think, what makes it unique. Because the labels, you know, the label You've Changed isn't like coming from the perspective of, we want you to post more TikToks, we want you to, like, you know, make three or four reels a week. You know, there are times where I, especially being a person that, like, I mean, I'm sure it's like this for every single artist that goes on tour. Like, you know, you're expelling so much emotional energy, and you're really trying to give everyone that comes and sees you the time they need, and like say hi to them and, you know, show them how grateful you are for coming out and supporting you and listening to your music. So, you know, when I get home sometimes, also, you know, what we were saying even before about how messed up the world is right now, it's really hard to, like, sometimes think that what I'm doing is more important than, like, the broader spectrum of things. So sometimes I think me eliminating my voice from that social media space is, like, important to shine lights on other things. So, you know, in that sense, I'm happy that You've Changed isn't like, I'm trying to say, like, they respect me needing to take time to recharge and, like, just kind of, like, leave the ball in my court, you know? There's not a lot of pressure, you know, which is great, because if I was being forced to do something, like, being forced to be public or being forced to create content all the time, like, I don't think it would feel as genuine, and I don't think it would connect with people in the same way. You know, thank you, Steve, for creating this label, working tirelessly for other artists to give them a platform to show their creativity with the world. You've changed. You've changed.
really known or even speculated. Is it about, geez, is it a line from a lyric of a song? That's my guess.
Oh, I think it's like probably some stuff with Dan changing his style up or something like that. And then like going all country or something at some moment. And then it was like, but damn, you've changed or something like that. That's what I guess.
I feel like I know this. I mean, does everyone just say that sign in Toronto on Queen Street or whatever? But I actually feel like I was just, man, I got such a bad short-term memory. Can you tell me?
I literally just thought like all those guys who started the label were changing their style and they changed. And they were like, oh, we're allowed to now or something like that because we're going to put out our own stuff.
My name is Spencer Burton. And I was on You've Changed Records with my old band, Attack in Black.
You've Changed? I think I remember. No, I don't remember anything. No.
I want to say it's from the perspective of someone like selling out or growing in a way where like maybe they become slightly more successful and someone's like, you've changed, man. You've totally sold out. That kind of vibe. Oh my God. I do want to know.
Yeah, that's because I think there was something at that point in history, you know, how there's slang terms and everyone goofs around and, you know, slang changes over the years. But at that point, I think something somebody always said was, you know, man, oh, you've changed. You know, that was like a kind of like a slang term, just not even signifying that the person's actually changed just in any little way. You know, it's like, oh, can I not get pickles on my hamburger, please, at the drive thru? And they're like, dude, you've changed. You know, it's like kind of just this goofy little thing everybody used to say. But just like anything in the world, it snowballs and, you know, became, if this is all hearsay. I'm spitballing here because I don't quite remember, but I think it just became more of a significant thing to say when talking about anything, right? Like with music, it was like, you know, Attack in Black started releasing albums on that label. And, you know, part of the reason for that was that we had all changed and, you know, it was time for a place for different music. I think I have no clue. Don't quote me on any of this.
I remember it was on a drive home from the East Coast. And I think we were playing Divan Orange in Montreal and somebody broke the long back window in our van. And so we had to tape it up with cardboard.
I think I remember being the one to suggest the name.
And Ian Kehoe at the time kept saying something that his childhood friend Ryan Belvedere used to say in high school, which was just saying, you've changed, everybody. What's up, man? You've changed. You know,
it is a phrase that I appropriated. That was kind of like slang, I suppose, that I would hear around high school, I suppose. And it was, I guess, a bit of a way of making fun of someone with love, where, yeah, like, let's say if you didn't want to go out that night because you had to like study for a math test, someone might say, you've changed, as a way of expressing sort of like disappointment, but not in such a way that was super judgmental or antagonistic. So there's like an element of fun to it. And yeah, it's just a phrase I happened to remember at that time, because I had been out of high school for a little bit at that stage, at least, and was just amused by.
And it was really funny when he would say it, but then we just decided that we would start a record label. I think on the drive home, which was quite breezy due to the lack of a rear window, but we sort of fabricated the whole idea for that. And we taped up some cardboard on the whole, and then Kehoe wrote, you've changed, across it. And that sort of sealed the deal and sealed the window.
Yeah, philosophically, I'm not too sure. There's a paradox involved in, like, I mean, celebrating the 15th anniversary of something called You've Changed. And the label has changed, but it's also stayed the same. And without thinking for a while, that's, I suppose, the most I could say.
I remember when we were, you know, having this conversation about starting a label and that coming up as a name, kind of laughing about like, oh, like, you know, like, whatever, Julie Doron can make a death metal album, and then you'd say, oh, you've changed, Julie, or whatever, that kind of thing. So recontextualizing it. So in a very silly way, it was just another way to sort of claim like our own kind of like artistic freedom by reappropriating what was a criticism said by children towards each other as an overall brand. I don't think it's the coolest name ever. I don't love it. What does it mean to me now? I don't know. Like, it's just the name of the thing. Like, you know, the idea came up in the sort of original founding kind of conversation, and it seemed free and funny sort of at the time, and it's fine now. It's just the name of the thing now to me.
It's an exciting time. I think Steve is really, he seems really open-minded. We were just talking the other day, and he sounded really hopeful for the future. And despite when I was talking to him, he was doing a bunch of grunt work. I think maybe he was in a good mood because I was distracting him from the grunt work that he was doing, like label grunt work. But he was just, you know, he was just asking me if I'd heard any cool bands that were nice people or something, you know, like he's still on the lookout for the future. He's overworked, so it's really difficult for him to take on new projects. But so I think with the roster as big as it is right now, I don't know how much it's going to change in the next 15 years. I'm sure a few more things will get added to the mix. But I think Steve probably wants to do right by everyone that's on the label now. So unless suddenly there's more help with administration, I think it'll sort of, you know, be approximately the way it is now. Maybe some of us will come, some of us will go.
Yeah, I would just like to see it continue to survive. You know, the music industry is obviously always changing and has changed a lot in the last 15 years and will continue to change. And You've Changed has been really good at adapting to the changing times while still staying true to its kind of core ethos. And yeah, I would love to see it make it to 100 releases, you know, in the next, you know, we're somewhere in the mid 60s right now. So get to 100, that would be amazing to see. And yeah, just kind of keep this community together. Like, I think there still is a role for labels, and I just hope that maybe this documentary will make people realize that, like, you know, it's good to kind of stick with your people and support each other, and, you know, it's not always about instant payoff. Sometimes it's about building something together. And yeah, I just hope You've Changed keeps building together with, you know, the amazing roster that they have, and that, you know, more people can join the fold.
Maintenance, I would say, just maintaining, sustaining in the weirdest landscape. I don't know. I think Steve has a knack for... Steve's got his finger on the pulse a lot more than I do, that's for sure. And I think he's got a great trajectory as far as finding interesting people and interesting projects to champion. I hope that he continues with that, should he so desire. And I'm very grateful to be a part of it. And I'm glad that people are interested.
It would weirdly feel like really counter to the whole idea if I was like, yeah, in 10 years we're going to be doing this. Because like, what I think we've done better than some other people is kind of staying in the moment, you know, and staying flexible with stuff, you know? Like, we're a few years past, like, a moment where, like, literally everything shut down, right? Like, my distributors were closed. Like, the warehouses were locked. Retail was locked. Luckily, I had built up, like, a very, like, well-established direct mail order thing over many years, you know? So I didn't have to create that on the fly. You don't ever know how things are going to go, you know? So... to me, like, flexibility is really like such a strength, you know. The other thing during like that time that was sort of revelatory was like being small and flexible, like allowed me to sort of weirdly thrive in that time when I was seeing like bigger labels like floundering, right? Because like, and they were canceling records or postponing records, and like things weren't coming out because everything was contingent on like these really like rigid plans. So rigidity and committing to some like vision for 10 years down the line is difficult. I would like it to continue to grow. I would like Colin to admit that he's a part of it. I would like, you know, to be able to employ more people so that people have work, and that it would be great if there was more people involved, and that would require growth, and then we could do that much better and that much better next time and blah, blah, blah. So I don't want this to come across as a lack of ambition. Like, I do have ambition for it, and like I have excitement for it, but it's just like the flexibility and like the being able to pursue the ideas is so fundamental that we have to sort of commit to that and sort of be consistent with that. So
I love You've Changed. You've Changed Forever. Woo! That's okay.
Look at you, you made it. You made it to the end. Thank you so much for listening to this special edition of this show, this is a special episode. It's called You've Changed Records is 15. I want to thank all of the participants involved. I hope you learned some stuff. There are a couple of little surprises in there, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed yourself and gained some insight and appreciation of You've Changed Records if you didn't already have it. And again, I want to thank everyone for appearing on this, the 850th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. If you're looking for an episode and you can't find it, or you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. Also, in the show notes, you'll see a thing that says follow Vish online. That's a link tree. It's links to my various social media presences and other things, YouTube, and I can't remember what else is on there. So click on that if you want to engage with me beyond listening to the show. Most importantly, though, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to support and sustain my work and this podcast, only if you have the means. As you'll see, you can support the show at different tiers, starting at $1 a month. You get access to my weekly updates. I'm trying to do more newsletter style, like reports, I suppose. Here's what's coming up on the show. Here's what I've been up to. At $4, you get $4 and up ad-free episodes, and you get those episodes earlier than everybody else. At $6, you start to get bonus content and all the other perks. And then at $10 a month, you get those perks, plus you get added to the random monthly prize pack draws we've been doing of late. So a little incentive for you, but ideally, again, if you can afford it, only if you can afford it and you want to support the show, please do. I'd like to make this my job, and I can't thank you enough. It's grown so much since we really started pushing this, and everyone's been so supportive and sharing it. So thank you so much. If you like the show and you like me, it doesn't matter if you like me. If you like the show, Patreon. I mean, you're supporting me too, so you kind of have to like me. I'm going to shut up. Thanks again to the wonderful independent Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, located in Calgary and Edmonton in real life. You can learn more about them at blackbird.ca. I also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their longtime in-kind support for this show. Also, thanks to Jim Guthrie for loaning me some music. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this gargantuan episode about You've Changed Records. Check out that label. Order some records. They're the best. You're the best. Thank you for listening. I will talk to you very soon. Bye for now.